Hello, this is Paul Solentrop, Wichita State University Strategic Communications. You are listening to the Roundhouse Podcast. Today, we will talk Shocker Baseball with pitchers Shane Dennis and Jamie Bluma. They were both members of the teams that went to the College World Series in 1991, 1992, and 1993. Those teams took the success of the 1989 National Champions and raised the popularity and the profile of the program with that great run. We talk about the regional wins at home, Darren Dryford's greatness, playing Creighton, a famous game in 1991, outfield defense, and heated moments during the Shocker World Series. Thanks for listening. We have Shane Dennis and Jamie Bluma, and we are going to talk about a fascinating time in Wichita State baseball, the early 90s. Let me introduce these two gentlemen first. Shane Dennis, All-American, NBC Pitcher of the Year in 1994, went 9-2 with a 1.35 ERA. And then we have Jamie Bluma. Both of them played from 91 to 94. Jamie, member of the MVC's All-Centennial team, a member of Wichita State's 25th anniversary team. He was All-Valley in 93 and 94. Still ranks second at WSU with 114 career appearances, so they ran him out there a bunch. 2.35 ERA, his 34 saves, ranks second. Shane and Jamie, thanks for joining us. First, update people on what you're doing now. Shane, tell the people where you're at and what you're doing.
Well, pre-COVID-19, I was pretty busy doing a lot of TV for the university between volleyball, men's and women's basketball, and up until early March, baseball. So staying pretty busy there, but otherwise co-hosting Sports Daily weekday mornings from 9 to 11 on 97.5, let's see, 1240 and 97.5. AFH.
Yes, Shane, a familiar voice to Shocker fans. Jamie is molding young baseball minds up in Kansas City. Jamie, give us the update on your current status.
I'm currently working for a new organization here in Kansas City called Homefield. We have two great facilities, one in Olathe, a 250,000 square foot indoor all sport facility, and one on the Missouri side at 435 in Bannister. Again, another all-sport facility. Teaching and coaching baseball, travel ball. Actually, this morning had camp. First day we've had camp since all this craziness started. So a whole bunch of kids signed up, and we're happy to be outside over at Blue Valley Recreation Complex. Do that full-time. I'm going to also have my own nonprofit, Red, White, and Bluma, that I'm in charge of. We try to raise money for not only military nonprofits, but any other Kansas City or Wichita or nonprofits across the area that I'm affiliated with. And I sit on the board for a few golf tournaments that also raise some money for some other awesome nonprofits here in Kansas City. And that keeps me busy. So it's nice to get back somewhat into the swing of things this week.
And if you're watching on the simulcast, you'll see that Shane Dennis has a Red, White, and Bluma hat on. Is that correct, Shane?
Yeah, I'm representing.
Very good. Cross-branding. We love it. All right. Early 90s, a lot of success. I think it's fascinating because I kind of see it as something of a dividing line between Shocker baseball kind of growing up, kind of being maybe a little bit of a niche. And then in 89, obviously things start to change. But then in 91, I think it just really grows into this big monster. And the attendance figures double and, you know, home regionals and going back to Omaha, all of that. So let's start there. First, why choose Wichita State out of high school? What got both of you to Wichita State? Shane, we'll let you start.
Well, it was either that or no other big level offers. A few junior colleges, Pittsburgh State was a possibility. Although, as I recall, I think my timing's right, they were just starting baseball again. When Wichita State came calling, it really felt like that, you know, if I'm going to get where I want to be in this sport, you got to go to Wichita State when you get the chance. So I didn't have exactly a lot of other offers. I think maybe KU had written a few letters or called a couple of times, but it was Wichita State or bust for me.
And Jamie, the answer is probably obvious, but I'll let you talk about how you got to Wichita State.
Not as obvious as you'd think. Obviously, my older brother Jeff was currently at Wichita State, and he had gone there as a walk-on and pitched well enough and was a good enough student to be able to make that team and was part of the 89 National Championship team. And I had a decent enough high school career, but I'm still 5'11" and 200 pounds and a dime a dozen, and just had decent enough stuff to get a small offer from Wichita State, not a huge offer. My other options were, KU I took a visit to, and also Oklahoma. University of Oklahoma had Vern Rule as a pitching coach. So that was an interesting option at the time. And it just made sense when it came right down to it, you know, having known the staff a little bit because of Jeff and having been around the program, that's the direction that I ended up choosing to go. And I'm glad I did.
So you both came in 1991. So they had the national championship. They first hosted a regional in 90. Stadium is, you know, they're improving that, adding on pretty regularly. And I think in 92 was when they built the new locker rooms and the new offices and things like that. How do you think your Shocker baseball experience was different coming in the 90s as opposed to the guys who were maybe just a few years before you?
A little luckier. You know, we benefited from what the 89 team did. And I know Jamie knows all about that. I'm sure he went to a million games that Jeff was pitching in. But I was honestly, more than anything, just kind of overwhelmed and awed when I got here in the fall of 90, just because of the small school that I came from. I think even then I realized they don't all look like this, and the atmosphere is not like this everywhere. Even then, you know, it's obviously evolved over the years even more. But and to your point, Paul, about the attendance and the attention and the notoriety that it got in by 91, I think we've got the 89 team to thank for that for sure. And, you know, the 90 team that had all those expectations to live up to follow the 89 bunch and to fall short in that regional in Wichita, or the players returning that Jamie and I and Darren Dreyfuss and Joey Jackson and John Llewellyn and all those guys came into, we realized it pretty quickly that they wanted to get the 90 season paced out of their mouth really, really fast. But, you know, for as much as we did 91, 92, 93, the 88 and 89 teams kind of paved the way and the excitement around the program for us.
Yeah, Jamie, what were your observations? Well, you've been around a lot with your brothers.
Well, you know what? Haven't been around a little bit, but not being part of, you know, actual practice or facilities other than being at the ballpark and watching at the ballpark that day, we've benefited greatly from what that 88, 89, and 90 team had done as far as moving forward. Not only in 91, we were still practicing at the Heskett Center. We were still not much of an indoor facility at all to be able to do practice. And we weren't even on the first base side of X Stadium at that time. So for me, it was more about the people that I had seen play for the previous 3 years and had gotten drafted and were making their way through the minor leagues. And obviously the Joe Carters and the Phil Stevenson and the Lauren Hibbs and the Brian Elkers and all those guys had already been through and had great success getting into professional baseball. But the next wave of guys, the Eric Wedges, the Mike Lansing, the Pat Mears, haven't known those guys since I was a 13, 14-year-old. And to see what those guys had done and where they had been when they came into Wichita State, kind of not as highly touted athletes as well, I really felt like, man, this is the place that I need to be. And I'm with a bunch of guys that were all kind of in the same boat, that we weren't highly drafted high school guys, you know, from kind of workman-like programs. And, you know, I had played against Joey Jackson a little bit. Everybody had heard of Darren Dreyfuss. And I was like, wow, we've got an opportunity here to do some great things if we all work as hard as the people that before us have worked.
So you roll in as freshmen in 91, and most of the 89 team, most of those guys are gone, but Jim Audley's still around, Mike Jones, Charlie Gendrone. It's a new look in many ways. Take us back. What was kind of the mood? Who set the atmosphere? Who set the expectations on that team?
Oh, I would say Audley would probably be front and center. Mike Jones, too, was a big part of molding me, I know personally, in 1991. And Jamie can attest to this, too, because Jones caught a little bit. But he was I think him and Audley were really the catalysts. And it was, for the most part, once we got between the lines, a no-nonsense kind of thing. But Damien, unless I'm remembering wrong, I don't know that there was much talk of 89 so much as it was of 90, that they were, you know, we weren't defending anything in 1991. And in 90, they were. They had the 89 team to follow. But I think Mike Jones and Jim Audley, more than anybody, position player-wise, kind of set the mold. Like, here's how it's going to be around here. One of the big things I remember when I started fall practice my freshman year is, man, we're around a bunch of men, you know, and I better grow up quick if I want to play on this team anytime soon.
Absolutely. And to have those all guys be senior, and I'll throw Todd Dreifert into that bunch too, that had a taste of that 89 team and maybe weren't big part of it because they were young guys and maybe they got their ABs and their innings and all that kind of thing. But with Kenny Steenstra and Tyler Green and Darren Paxton and some older guys that were a little bit older than us, knowing that, man, we were really going to have to bust our butts to even get any innings or playing time because of the amount of talent that was on the roster. And I can say this about my freshman fall and going into that first 6 minute mile, I thought I knew how to work hard when I was in high school. And then you come back and you go through the rigors of the first fall and then winter, getting ready for your first spring. And there was a small part of me, maybe 15%, that didn't know if I was going to make it or not because I had never had to work that hard. But in that, in turn, I think made me realize, wow, if we're going to get where we need to get to, not just us as a team, but me individually moving forward in my career, the different mindset and different work ethic and a whole different level of dedication is going to have to come from this.
I think everybody except Darren Dreifert felt that way, at least in some ways, that fall.
I've heard stories about the super competitive practices, you know, talking and, you know, stealing bases and those kind of things. Was that a real part of the atmosphere, an important part of that team?
Yeah, especially in the Shocker World Series. That was a real thing. I thought we were going to fight a couple of times, legit, clear them, with our own, against our own guys.
Really?
No doubt.
Like, yeah. What happened?
I can attest to that because I might have been on the mound.
I
think it was my my team. I don't remember if I was black or yellow or white or whatever, but Mirabelli was my catcher, and Wimmer had gotten on base. Either I don't know if a walk or something happened that I don't want. He was obviously kind of a cocky guy. You wanted him on your team. You didn't want to be playing against him, but we're playing against him in this instance in the fall, and then he immediately stole second base and was. And doing it again, and Mirabelli wasn't happy about it. And I think his next at bat, I must have run one up and in on him, and we maybe cleared him a little bit, and we got each other's faces, and we had to have a meeting with Gene and Brent, and as a squad, either at the end of that practice or right then. Hell, it might have been right then in the game. We might have stopped it right then, but at the same time, hearing years later. But that's the kind of thing that Gene and Brent and JT and Lauren Hibbs, that's what they loved about those years is there was such competition and win, and want to do that way. That's what they loved about it, but they maybe couldn't say it out loud at the time.
So the Shockers go to Omaha 91, 92, 93. They're national runner-ups in 91 and 93. Are we correct to think about it? 91 and 92 were both kind of these similar, just overwhelming juggernauts. 93 more an overachieving group. Is that the right way to think about that time?
That's exactly the way I would put it. We didn't lose any regional games in 91 or 92. Swept right through it. That was when there were six teams. So it seemed kind of daunting, you know, when you started 0-0 that you had to go through everybody, and it might take a while to do it. But we didn't get a loser's bracket until 93 in Atlanta. I still think that 91 team was maybe the best team ever assembled at Wichita State. I know I'm kind of biased because I was on it. I was there. I saw it. But, yeah, it was man, that 91 team, we pretty much mowed through everybody. And 92 is similar, maybe more so with pitching than hitting. Like 91, I feel like there were just a ton of weapons offensively in 91. And then in 93, it was Darren Dreyfuss, Toby Smith, and then the rest of us, especially once we got to postseason. That's the way I saw it. I mean, if not for those two guys, especially once the Valley Tournament started, we don't get to Omaha, and I can't believe we made it to the championship game in 93, honestly. Comparatively speaking to the other, to the 91 and 92 teams, the 93 team deserves a bow because it was a lot more on a couple of guys as opposed to 9, 10, or 12 like it was the previous 2 years, I think.
Well, the 91 team, obviously the cream of the crop was the games that we got to play against Creighton. And over the last 25 years, I've gotten to still be good friends with a bunch of guys. I saw a lot posted on Facebook last week about that 91 team in their instance. And for us to have beat them as many times as we did, four times in the regular season and then two times in the Valley Tournament. And then I still don't know why they put us in the same bracket in Omaha. Maybe they didn't want us playing against each other in the national championship game was probably the reason they did it, so we would equal each other out. And to have those, that first epic game against them, the 12 inning game, I just kind of thought it was destiny in 91 that we were going to end up winning that thing. And then Armando Rios, LSU was a juggernaut of its own back then. And then 92, obviously, man, we almost had our entire team back. And then our group being sophomores, Mirabelli and Wimmer and those guys being juniors, I think we kind of thought it was a foregone conclusion because we had done what we had done the year before. We were kind of maybe full of ourselves. And it always was kind of tough because the draft always happened right when we were in Omaha. And I think there was some consternation about where people got drafted and then maybe took our focus off what we needed to do in Omaha, and we lost both games. And then in 93, we just played good late. I mean, we had had a decent year during that year, a lot of us. And to do what we did and have to go to Georgia Tech with Garcia Parr and Veritek, and I remember getting to go watch Greg Brummett's major league debut at Fulton County Stadium, which was crazy. And then for us to come back and win that 93, to make it to Omaha was great. And I think we were just playing as good as anybody in the country. We had two of the best players in the country, and Toby Smith and obviously Darren Dreyfuss, both offensively and defensively, just do amazing things. The next thing we know, we look up and we're in the national championship game again. And unfortunately, they had a guy named Brett Laxton. So.
You brought up all the Shocker boogeyman there in one reply. favorite regional memory from any of those years you were in? What stands out?
Oh, man. I think in 92, we could kind of see it coming. And Jamie, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe that was the Steamster game where he beat Oklahoma State. But anyway, I could anyway. I felt like we could see it coming, and
Didn't we beat Sean Lowe from Arizona State too?
We would have had to have the first or second game, maybe something like that.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
yeah. But the anticipation from coming on the heels of 91. I could feel it. I was like, there's no way we're going to lose. So around the seventh inning of the final final game really did it for me. Like, we're going to do this. We're going back to Omaha. I got a lot better, fonder memories in 92 than I do in 93 because I didn't do much to help in 93. So as miraculous as that was, the win down there in Atlanta, I thought sewing up the regional at our place in 92 and kind of counting down the outs was the one for me. But then again, and Jamie, you can chime in here, but the atmosphere in 91 seemed really ultra nuts. Like, you couldn't jam any more fans in there, and it couldn't be any louder than it was those stretch of games in 91 also.
I agree, and that 91, just with all of us being freshmen and it kind of being the first time for me, not in the stands, but on the field, and to have only been 2 years removed from the national championship game, I think there was there 10,000 plus there one game? It was crazy, and to do that at home and make it, so that was the first impression for me, like, wow, this is as good as getting to the big leagues has to be going here. And then I remember just pulling into Omaha for the first time and staying at the Red Line and doing all that. And then, you know, getting a chance to go down and do it at Georgia Tech. It's the first time that we hadn't hosted a regional. And to go on the road in 93, where nobody really expected us to do much of anything, having lost who we lost in 92, to be able to do it on their turf, with two bigger stars than just about anybody in college baseball, and Garcia Parra and Veritek, was a pretty awesome feeling.
Favorite Omaha memory?
Oh, man. I was thinking about this yesterday. Short of making it to the big leagues, and Jamie can speak to this because he's been both places, that's an amateur baseball player's big leagues, getting to be in Rosenblatt, getting to be on a team, on a field, on that stage, even then. I mean, it's super popular now, but even back then, it was just to have qualified to get there as a participant, as a player. It was second to none. I mean, playing, especially in that Creighton game, like Jamie alluded to, the highest rated college baseball game ever, and maybe still, I don't know, but to have the seat that we had to watch those games, short of making it to the big leagues, that's the ultimate, just being there.
Hey, man, I remember pitching against Texas, and it's all the people that you've dreamed about playing against with, you know, Brooks Kieschnick in Texas, and then Florida State, Arizona, you know, it was all the guys. And then to be a part of that 91 12 inning game against Creighton and be the winning pitcher, and just to go back and look at all the different people on the field and where they have been and where they have gone to since then, you know, from Dax Jones to Kamara Barti to Scott McLuhan to even the guy that got thrown out the plate, Tamir Belli, to the managers of each team, and Brian O'Connor, who was the losing pitcher for the Creighton Blue Jays, ended up winning the national championship at Virginia. Like, it is amazing, and I couldn't be luckier to be a part of that game, period. And I get goosebumps every time I see it, and I've watched it probably a million times over, but it's still amazing to me to look back and see all the different people on both sides of that field and where they went to, and to be a part of that in Omaha. After watching my brother be there in 88, after watching them win it in 89, to get an opportunity to do that as a 18, 19-year-old, like, the big leagues might have not even been that good for a whole different set of reasons.
The famous play that Jamie is referencing is, for the younger people out there, of course, the throw from Jim Oddly to Doug Mirabelli. So I guess I'm honor bound. Jamie, take us through that play. Like, I'm sure you've done it a million times, but take us through it one more time.
Yeah, I had thrown probably one of the best sliders of my life to Dax Jones to pitch before, and it was just off the plate, and he did a hell of a job of not swinging at it. And then I threw another slider. It was a little bit closer out over the plate, and thank God he hit it as hard as he did to center field, because Oddly got a good jump and picked it up off one hop, and they had pinch ran for whoever was on second base, and I think the pinch runner was actually slower for whatever reason, and Audley made the throw of a lifetime, a one hopper. Doug Mirabelli did an amazing job of just being stoic and not acting like the ball's coming. I was actually doing the right thing, and I was backing up home plate, which is where I should have been, not being a spectator. And he was out at the plate. And I'm still watching the replay. When I'm bouncing out from behind home plate to go back on the mound, I can attest to this. I don't even barely remember the end of the game because all that happened. And I had to watch the video again to see, I think, the last at bat. Somebody grounded out to Wimmer, I think. But after that, man, everything was gravy. And we won the game 3-2 in 12 innings. And amazing. I mean, just amazing to be a part of it, you know, whether I was a freshman or not. But that's a pretty amazing game to be in.
That clip is available on YouTube. I would highly recommend watching it. I was packed into the right field bleachers, and my memory of it is tremendous roar, of course, Creighton crowd. And then just kind of silence at the instant that he's out, and then another roar. It was unlike anything I think I've experienced at a sporting event.
Yeah, Jamie's right. He had one more out to get, and Jason Judge was the guy that he hit. The first pitch to start the bottom of the 12th after we just took the lead. So one pitch in, he puts the tying run on. Anyway, Steve Bruns was the guy pinch running. And I think it was Bobby Langer, the guy that you had to get. It was a ground ball to Wimmer, and it was a left-handed hitter. I think it was Bobby Langer.
I think you're right.
So I think that fills in the blanks there. But, God, you were right, Paul. It was – you could hear a pin drop in there. You talk about taking the air out of that place. It was 3 hours and however long of just – I mean, on pins and needles, everybody. And when Dax Jones hit that missile to center, it's like, oh, God, here they come. And Audley made the throw of his life. That was indescribable.
Quite a moment.
I'll tell you what I remember. I remember from the inning before, I don't remember if it was the ninth inning or the 10th inning, but I struck out Stachowiak looking on a backdoor slider, and he slammed his bat on the ground. And I'm like, I'll never forget that thing. Cause he hit about 700 that year, I think, as a first rounder, and to be able to get him out, I think we ended up, first of all, I never threw three innings. I think that was the only time I threw three innings in my whole collegiate career. And to have it end up going the way it did was super special.
That was a great, great Creighton baseball team. And for Wichita State to go 8-0 against them was pretty amazing. How do you explain that?
I still can't. I mean, there's no way, not that we feared them, but like Jamie said, before in the regular season that we pretty much thumped them. The key for us was getting into their bullpen because that was the difference in the teams. They probably hit quite a bit better than we did, but we pitched better from 1 through 12. And they had about two or three starters that were certainly worthy of you paying attention to. But, my God, they raked. They averaged, I don't know how many runs a game. So, you know, Mike Heathcott was their big guy, but – once we got into their bullpen, I felt like it would, you know, turn the tables in our favor. But when you play somebody eight times, you just can't assume that you're going to do the same formula every time because, you know, Jamie was joking about Stachowiak, but he legitimately hit like 441 that year. I mean, they hit 360 as a team, you know. So I still don't know how – have any earthly idea how we beat them 8-8. I don't know.
And one of the advantages we had, and I was thinking about this today, was Billy Hall and Chris Wimmer. We had two guys at the top of the lineup that were just lightning fast. And it feels like that we scored first. I'd have to go back and look at all eight of those games. But once we had scored and were up on them, I think it got to be a psychological factor at some point.
Yeah.
Because we were already ahead, and they couldn't get us with their starters. We just had better arms late, and that was it.
Jim Hendry, would have to mention his name, is another, you know, important figure that game. He, of course, was Creighton's coach and went on to major league fame. Which Dreifert home run do you remember the most from those seasons?
The one where he helped himself against Arizona State in 93.
Same.
He gave up a home run to some dude named Sean Tyler that barely played that year. I mean, we were packing up the stuff in the bullpen, like in Dryford. It was over. And they pinch hit this little left-handed guy, and he somehow ran into one and tied the game. And we were like, no way, that just happened. And then I think maybe two innings later or something, James, Dryford hit it out of the stadium, basically.
No doubter.
Yeah, I mean, like, and I'm not kidding. I think he did hit it out of the stadium, and then he finally got the last three outs. That's the one I remember. He blew the lead and then helped himself by hitting about a 900-foot home run.
Which didn't surprise anyone.
No.
You're talking about 93, Wichita State beat Arizona State 4-3 in 11 innings in the opener in Omaha. Now, that was a little bit of a trick question because, of course, Todd Dryford had some really good home runs, too. He had the grand slam against Cal in the regional title game in 91. In 92, he had a two-run home run against Oklahoma State in the title game that kind of salted things away. So I was interested in your memory. Darren Dryford, my memory of him is that he was this kind of looming presence over every game. You know, just down there in the bullpen. When was he coming in? Did they use him? When can they use him in the next game? What made him such a great baseball player?
Oh, man. For as talented as he was just as competitive as that, and that's saying something. Couldn't throw a ball straight if he tried. Everything out of his hand that I saw from the time I got there till the time he left was 95 to 99, and that was before everybody was doing that. I think it was our freshman year, if not our sophomore year, Texas Arlington came to town for a two-game midweek series. And, Paul, you talked about the Georgia Tech team looking like a bunch of men a little while ago. UTA's team looked like a football team, too. They were, like, getting off the bus. It was eye-popping. Anyway, I find out later that in one of the games that Dryford came in, he came in like the fifth or sixth inning and then finished the game. A lot of the UTA hitters, and this was a night game, too, they were going back to the dugout with the brim of their hat pulled way down so that their head coach couldn't see them laughing when they were trying to talk to the guy on deck and tell him what has he got. You know, he was as lights out as anybody I've ever seen, man. And LSU got to him a little bit our freshman year in the title game, but man, and plus he hit moonshots when he was DHing too. He's a freak, and he was really super nice off the field and super unassuming and quiet and didn't want the attention, but he wanted to be either on the mound or up there when the game was on the line, and he came through a lot more times than he did, that's for sure.
Agreed, and to echo what Shane said, I mean, he was throwing hard with movement before anybody was, you know, 95 to 97 and stuff like they are now. Like, he was a freak among freaks. The only person – you know, there's only a couple guys back then that we'd ever heard throwing that hard. Wayne Gomes, maybe, or Paul Shuey, or you know, Bennis, Andy Bennis, not Alan Bennis, Andy Bennis out of Evansville back in the day. And then you got this kid doing it, and it's not straight, it's a sinker. And, you know, pair that with a slider. And as Shane said, too, you know what? Laid back as it comes, man. He was just a good guy, and he had a little history around the program just because of his father working for the university, and everybody had played summer ball with his family, and he was kind of comfortable in his own skin there, but not cocky. And then he didn't even hit much his freshman year. He didn't hit a whole ton his sophomore year, so to get an opportunity when we needed him, you know, going into 93 when we had lost some offensive talent, for him to be able to just step into a DH role on top of everything he was doing from a pitching standpoint, to go out and do what he was doing hitting. And a couple of things that I laugh about with guys 25 years later is I don't think he started on the mound one game in college. Shane, you can say whether he did or didn't. I don't think he did.
I think there were maybe three or four spot starts that he made, but not very many. Almost all of them are out of the pen. I mean, he may have started a couple.
It was so funny to laugh with guys like, you guys were in the same bullpen. How did you guys – I said, if we had a lead, we weren't going to lose. And if it was on Friday and it was the fifth inning and someone struggled, then Darren was going to finish it out. And then if it was either Saturday or Sunday and it was the eighth inning, I was going to finish it out. So we had kind of the you know, kind of like the Royals did in 2015, 2016 with their bullpen. We were doing it in 91 and 92, not even knowing what we were doing. We just happened to have the right personnel accidentally.
When I say outfield defense in those days, what do you think of?
We had it, and the teams we were playing didn't. It was elite. I mean, if the ball wasn't out of the ballpark, it got caught. And that's, you know, that started in 89 or 91 with Tommy Tilma, Jim Oddley, Todd Dreyfuss. There's your three there. And then we mix in Richie Taylor, Randy Young, Carl Hall. We got spoiled to death. And it showed up when we played another team. And Chris Wimmer played a little outfield. Balls that we hit that would find gaps or guys would take terrible routes on. I mean, we were just shaking our heads because our guys never did that. Our outfield, I think that, besides team speed, is maybe one of the things in the early 90s that is underrated and underappreciated and not talked about enough is Wichita State's outfield defense. Not just arms, but outs to the ball, and balls got sucked up. They went after fly balls like none other, and it showed up when we played other teams.
Who saw Billy Hall coming out of nowhere in that 1991 season?
His dad, I think, did. He had a T-shirt printed up. None of the rest of us, though, boy.
We knew he could run, and he put the work in to be able to become better defensively. I mean, speed is speed. It's just whether it's functional or not. To have two guys with he and Chris Wimmer with elite speed at the top of the lineup, you got two guys that steal 60 bags. Are you kidding me? Good luck.
And he was a self-made player too, Paul. I mean, he really worked at it. And between bunting, which he would show at least once every AB, and the range that he had at second base and the hands he had at second base, difference between, you know, even the fall of 90 and the spring of 91. He willed himself to be a great player, and I'll never forget scouting reports weren't a real big deal back then, so it's like, okay, this Billy Hall guy, he's a switch hitter, he's leading off, so he must be pretty fast. And if he did a ground ball to a middle infielder and they patted their glove one extra time, he was safe. And we all saw it coming in the dugout. We had to deal with him in inter squads. And after a while, the fans started feeling it. And once he'd get on, here came Wimmer. And I've never seen a more jittery infield, no matter who we played. Once they figured out that these guys are lightning fast, it was fun to watch. It was not fun to practice against. I know that, but. Watching those two guys run the bases was a thing of beauty.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We appreciate your time. We encourage you to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, such as on iTunes or Google Play. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com. Thank you for listening.